Hello and welcome to the opening bell. My name's Matt Christie. I'm with John Dennan this week.
Hello.
Apologies for last week's no-show. We are all quite heavily snowed under with work. At the moment, as we speak now, the annual is going to press. So we have all been working really hard on that. Of course, there's kind of holidays, bugs, and things going around, which is...
So you're saying it's all my fault because I was on holiday?
It's all your fault, John. It's all your fault. Or Paul Wheeler. Paul Wheeler's on holiday this week as well.
I can't cope without him.
it's been tough, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So anyway, let's move on. And we'll start with what happened last weekend, which does seem quite a while ago now. But a wonderful image on the front cover of Boxing News this week. Perhaps not so wonderful for the man on the receiving end of the punch, and that was Marco Antonio Rubio, who went over in two rounds against Gennady Golovkin. Now, I don't know what your opinion is of Golovkin, John, but for me, he is perhaps the most thrilling star in boxing at the moment. He's the one that's doing it regularly, and you can almost guarantee that even if a fight is one-sided, it's going to be worth watching at the moment. However, there's been a lot of stuff that I've seen on the internet and on forums and this, that and the other, where people are comparing Golovkin to the likes of Marvin Hagler, people like that. What's your take on Golovkin as a fighter in his own era, and has he shown enough for us to compare him to other eras?
Well, he looks fantastic and he's really doing the business, looking spectacular, but he hasn't fought any of the top level guys yet, so I think we've got to reserve judgment a little bit until he's been in the ring with, you know, someone who can really extend him. He hasn't fought any of the sort of A-list middleweights yet.
Who is going to step up? And I mean, middleweight, the obvious one would be Miguel Cotto, but it seems that he's otherwise engaged in May with Saul Canelo Alvarez, yeah, which is a fantastic fight.
Also, even could you ever see Cotto getting in there with Golovkin?
I think at this point in his career, he would probably wisely sidestep it. That's not by any means a knock on Miguel Cotto or his courage or anything else he's proved throughout his career. But at this stage, I'd be surprised if he went in with Gennady Golovkin.
I think we all have a hunch which way that fight would go, yeah, when, you know, Cotto could go in with Saul Alvarez in a sort of an even bigger fight for more money, which is more of a chance of winning.
Do you think that Golovkin should, I mean, because there's not, Cotto aside, there's not many marquee names in that middleweight division at the moment.
I mean, if Chavez Jr. could make the weight.
No way. No way. I'd be surprised if you could make light heavyweight at the moment. But Golovkin, you know, they've said in this week's guest column from Tom Loeffler, he's said that Golovkin can go down to light middleweight and he'll fight Floyd Mayweather if that fight can be made, which suggests that he can get down to light middleweight. So is moving up to super middleweight going to be too much a jump for him? If he can get down to light middleweight, does that suggest that super middleweight is just above and beyond, really?
I wouldn't think so, because he's got the power to go up that division, And the thing is, he probably needs to move up to get a sort of big name opponent in the ring with him. And then, you know, if it's probably an easier sell for the opposition if they think, okay, he's a small guy who could make light middleweight. He's going to be out of his depth with the bigger beast, super middle. So I think the sort of business necessity would dictate that he has to go up to super middle.
Andre Ward against Golovkin, two fighters who perhaps we could say are too good for their own good. It's not a saying that I'm overly fond of, but that could be a super fight, could it not?
Yeah, I think that would be. I think that would be a great fight. You know, it's sort of. I think it would work for both of them, in that Golovkin needs a big name and a major fighter, Andre Ward needs to fight someone, and it seems like, you know, is he particularly, I don't know what's going on with Andre Ward, but there's an interesting contrast in it. At least Golovkin has been busy and active and winning in style, whereas Ward's just been completely out of the picture by not fighting at all.
Okay, let me just put you on the spot. I'll ask you two quick questions. Well, the first one will be the fight we've just discussed. So Golovkin, Andre Ward, as succinctly as you can, who wins?
Ward.
That was succinct.
Thanks, mate.
How?
Points. By punching him more often and getting hit less himself.
What would the score be-ish? On a reasonable scorecard.
I suppose Ward wins. I don't know. Ward wins by four rounds.
116-112, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so Floyd Mayweather stuns everybody. Says, right, in May, I am going to fight Gennady Golovkin. Who wins?
May 2015.
158 catchweight.
Golovkin.
Golovkin.
The method of victory.
Yeah.
Left hook, right to the solar plexus at 2 minutes and 23 seconds into the ninth round.
And would Mayweather have been winning prior to that?
Yeah.
There's some interesting fights to be made for Golovkin. Let's just hope that they are made for his sake and for boxing's sake, because potentially there is a legend in the making there, but we just have got no idea. And any kind of chat about him in against the likes of Hagler and Sugar Ray Robinson and everything else is ludicrously, ludicrously premature at the moment, I think.
But it's good to talk. It's good to dream.
It is. It's true. Okay, also on that bill was kind of someone who we would now call yesterday's hero, Nonito Donaire. He seems to have... He's all out of options now, isn't he? After this loss, it was a war. He certainly had Nicholas Walters in trouble early on, or he wobbled him. But the difference to me seemed to be in the punching power, and as Donaire said afterwards, he beat the shit out of me. and he's now really considering his options. Wasn't that long ago that Donaire looked like he was going to cruise all the way to the Hall of Fame. He was going to follow Manny Pacquiao's footsteps and be one of the game's superstars. What's gone wrong for Nonito Donaire?
I don't know. He's never been the same since Rigondo, has he?
Do you think it's the fact that because certain people have suggested that he's dedicated because I think, you know, his firstborn was born... Not, I think, in the build-up to the Rigondo fight,
yeah,
I think I'm right in saying. And people have suggested that his focus has switched from boxing to his family, or it certainly takes some of the edge off his fiery focus. Or do you think he's just not built for the bigger weights?
There's an element of that, you know, sort of going up too many divisions, and he's probably not... Certainly not a featherweight. So if he is going to continue, then he should probably go down, shouldn't he? But I do think the fire has died to an extent, and in a way for sort of positive reasons outside of the ring, as in he's been successful, he's clearly his sort of family and his actual life is now, you know, things like that are more important than boxing, believe it or not.
Yeah, no.
So I just think the sort of, you know, the fire burnt brightly when he was ripping, you know, through opponents through the weight class, but I just don't think he's as, you know, I think the Donaire of even a couple of years ago wouldn't have lost to Walters, would he?
No, he wouldn't. I remember doing a 10 count in the last 12 months, and it was 10 active fighters that looked like they would be going to the Hall of Fame, and I remember Nonito Donaire was in that 10. It is one of the questions this week in Heroes and Villains, a relatively new feature in the magazine. And one of the questions was, Nonito Donaire retires tomorrow. Does he make it into the Hall of Fame? We'll leave everybody else's answers secret, bar yours. What was your answer to that? Does he make it into the Hall of Fame? And just explain a little bit about your thinking behind the answer.
I think not, but I'm just not sure what are the sort of criteria for getting in there. Does he need, you know, does he have a, you know, is going through the weight classes in the style he did enough? Does he need a defining victory? And also, if he got Rigondo beat him so comprehensively, you know, at what should have been his peak, I think those kind of memories might count against him.
It's a difficult one, and I think some people who've made it into the Hall of Fame over the years perhaps didn't deserve it. You could make a case that there's less accomplished fighters in there than Donaire, but at the moment I think he's struggling. He's struggling to make the case. I think I agree with you there.
I think he's just hit a, you know, he just seems like a contented man.
Yeah.
And boxing's such a tough sport, you need to...
It's true.
You need to have a sort of, you know, uncompromising focus on it.
Exactly, exactly. Few people can do it, and it seems that Donaire is not one of them. Okay, let's move on, because how long have we been talking now? About 10 minutes?
Right, feels like massive, so much longer.
There's a massive, massive weekend of boxing. There's three big cards, all
good.
Yeah, they all are good, and they've all got, you know, there's British fighters in all of them. There's one in Monte Carlo. Is it Monte Carlo?
It is Monte Carlo.
Where Stewie Hall is going for trying to regain his old belt against Randy Caballero. Martin Murray also hoping to secure a shot at that man, Gennady Golovkin, when he goes in against Italy's Domenico Spada, who's a tough cookie. Also, we've got a good night of action in Liverpool. That to me is the best card this weekend for the purist, I would say. There's some real trade fights there, some real interesting contests that could go either way, and that's what we like to see. But also, much to enjoy as well, I would say, in Hull, where Tommy Coyle against that old warrior Michael Katsidis, and Luke Campbell as well makes a step up. Okay, so where should we start with those? Should we start in the order that I mentioned? And we'll start with Monaco. Stewie Hall, do you know much about his rival, Randy Caballero?
Not a vast amount. Well, I suppose, you know, we're going to know more about Stewie because we've seen him up close directly, so we know what he brings. He's strong, capable.
Yeah.
This is really a chance for Caballero to prove himself. You know, Caballero, I think he won his eliminator in Japan, am I right?
I think so.
Which is no easy thing to do, so I would imagine, I don't know what the odds are, but I would imagine Stewie's the underdog for this one.
Oh, it's funny you should say that. Funny you should mention the odds. Right, okay, I've got them here in front of me. What would you guess, Stewie Hall?
I can't count, Math. You tell me.
He is the underdog. He's 7-2, whereas Randy Caballero is 2-7 or 7-2 on. So, yeah, it's fairly hefty favourite, Caballero, there. And I think that's fair, really. I do think it's fair. Stewie Hall, as you say, typically determined for this one. But I'd be surprised if he was to win the belt. Now, Martin Murray, huge favourite, 1-12 against Domenico Spada. Are we writing off the Italian?
Yeah, but probably rightly. Just Murray is... You know, I think he's very tough to beat. I just don't think, you know, Murray probably deserves to be mixing in, well, he has mixed with world class and probably just, you know, should belong there. And Spada, you see him more as a European level fighter. Yeah. You know, and even Murray on an off day, you know, he boxed poorly against Kamitsky, but there was only going to, I think, hurt his hand, but it was still clear, you know, there's only going to be one winner there. So I think Murray is very good, and you know, get through this, and he's a viable opponent for Golovkin in February.
What chance do you give him against Golovkin?
I would definitely expect him to, you know, not. I would definitely expect him to give Golovkin rounds. I think he might be, you know, I think you might, you know, someone as powerful and dangerous as Golovkin, maybe you've got to be defensive to survive. So I think Golovkin will win widely, but Murray could be the man to go the distance with him.
Whoa. That'd be a victory in itself, wouldn't it? With Golovkin's reputation at the moment.
Exactly. But, and Golovkin can't keep knocking everyone out. Murray seems like a tough cookie.
He might be able to.
All right.
He might be able to. Okay. Right, let's move to Liverpool. Now, you're going to be in Liverpool.
I am.
Tomorrow night. You have...
Get my helicopter from Monte Carlo. Stop by in Liverpool.
Which fight are you looking forward to the most? In Liverpool,
you know, Tom Stalker versus Jack Catterall. That's a
tough fight,
good
to call,
fight.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really. That's, you know, and there's a lot at stake, really. You know, because Stalker, obviously, I've seen a lot of him as an amateur, so I know he's a good boxer. But as a professional, he hasn't got people talking about him in the way that the other 2012 Olympians have. So he's got a lot to prove, and if he doesn't win, then again those criticisms will just get louder. You know, and, then for Catterall, it's just, what an opportunity. Team GB Olympic captain, one of the sort of, high quality prospects. If he could get a win over him, that he'd make his name off that.
There's some interesting stuff on our website this week about this particular fight. There's a Q&A with Stalker where he kind of openly says how tough he's found the transition from, you know, the amateur code into professional boxing. And there's also some scathing criticism from Jack Catterall saying that he has seen absolutely no improvement in Tom Stalker since he ditched the vest and turned over. You're probably more experienced with these amateur guys since they've turned professional, in that you witnessed their journeys, or a lot of their journeys as amateurs, and you've watched closely as they've turned professional. How would you respond to what Jack Catterall is saying about Tom Stalker? Is it a fair criticism that he hasn't improved?
You know, I don't know. Maybe to an extent, as in, you know, but, you know, it's like, as an amateur, you know, he was really one of the best in the world at first lightweight and then light welterweight. So he's obviously not, you know, he won medals at everything other than the Olympic Games. So he's obviously not at that level as a pro. And it seems like he's been getting sort of stuck into fights with journeymen rather than sort of using his skills, because he's actually hard to hit, you know, and he's got good boxing skills. But he's been getting sort of, he's been getting stuck into fights, which is probably a tactical error, but has made it quite, you know, it's made it fun to watch. And he's all, but yeah, and he has shown he's got, you know, he can sustain a high work rate over, you know, rounds longer than amateur bouts. So there are glimmers of hope, but he needs to sort of, he kind of does need to get back to his best and sustain that over the course of a whole professional contest.
How would it affect his career? Because he's not, you know, he's more advanced in age than you know, a lot of the other prospects. If he was to lose this, if he was to lose a competitive decision, for example, would he find that difficult to come back from mentally? Or do you think there could still be a decent career out there for Stalker if he was to lose tomorrow night?
Yeah, I would think so. I don't think one loss has to be the end of the world. And even though he's 30, he did start boxing relatively late. So presumably he doesn't have that many miles on the clock. So I think he's still got quite a few years left in the sport. You know, and a loss, it all depends on how a fighter reacts to a loss.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't take it well, then, you know, that could send him on a downward spiral. But if a loss can be used as an opportunity to refresh yourself, change what you're doing, adapt. So I don't think it'd be the end of the world. You know, I think of someone like like Anthony Crawler, he's not the biggest puncher in the world. Yeah. Had a few losses, been written off, but has come like roaring back.
Yeah, it's a good reference point. Okay, who are you picking then, John?
I pick Stalker.
Yeah.
But then because I've seen so much of him as an amateur, I've sort of seen a lot more of what he can do, which, you know, I haven't seen anywhere near as much of Jack Catterall, so that would sort of colour my view.
Thomas Stalker, incidentally, 8-11 favourite, Jack Catterall 5-4, so it's a fairly close run thing in the bookmaker's eyes. 22-1 shout though for the draw. Does that work?
Cheeky fiver time.
Okay, so what else are we looking forward to in Liverpool? There's some. It's a decent bill. The other one I like the look of as well, and it's similar reasons. Derry Matthews, Adam Dingsdale. Dingsdale got a chance there of upsetting the Scouse hero.
I think he's got a chance, just because, you know, Derry's, what makes him such a pleasure to watch is that he can win fights you don't expect him to win, and he can also lose fights you don't expect him to lose. So it makes it, you know, he's one of those guys who's good to watch. I think Dingsdale's got a chance. I wouldn't write him off, but I definitely wouldn't pick against Derry Matthews.
Yeah, I remember Derry Matthews. I remember it must be 5 years ago now, and he'd lost. I remember him when he turned professional. There was such a buzz around Derry Matthews, and he was beating everyone. And then he lost. I remember he lost a few fights, and one of them was he got stopped, and he got stopped again. And I remember announcing his retirement, and maybe 18 months later he said he was coming back. And I must admit, my first, even though he was still mid-20s, my first instinct was, oh no, this isn't going to, you know, this is not a good idea. But you can really see why he is, and it's no exaggeration to call him a hero. He really, really is a hero in Liverpool.
He's suffered a lot for our viewing pleasure.
He really has. But the way he has rebuilt, and okay, he hasn't won every fight on his comeback, but the fact that he's won the British Championship and the level that he's at now. I know I've been campaigning for a Derry Matthews world title shot for a while now, but if he beats, I'm not saying he necessarily deserves it if he was to beat Dingsdale, but I do believe with some of the guys that get world title fights, no offence Stewie Hall, but if Stewie Hall can get a world title fight, then I think Derry Matthews can too.
All right, but how's it going to happen?
I don't know.
Mickey Bay in Las Vegas?
Oh, this is the thing as well. I wouldn't fancy Matthews against any of the lightweight titleists, I've got to say. But Mickey Bain, Las Vegas, that'd be some fun, wouldn't it?
I'd go
as well. Okay, so what is topping the bill in
Kevin Satchel's European title fight? There's a chance for Satchel to sort of. He hasn't really. There are so many good Liverpool fighters at the moment. It is people like Paul Butler, who's on the bill, Liam Smith and the Smith brothers. They're the guys who get attention in Liverpool, but this is Kevin Satchel's chance to sort of get his name out there and get people paying attention to one of the little guys.
I was a big fan, well, you know, I was a big fan of what Kevin Satchel was doing. I think he's immensely talented, Kevin Satchel. There isn't that much of a buzz around him. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he went all the way. Kevin Satchel, really, really gifted fighter. Anyway, there's plenty of that in the magazine. We'll move on to Hull, where Tommy Coyle against that man, Michael Katsidis. Now, this has got rumble
written all over it,
hasn't it? But there is, of course, the danger, the understandable danger and fear that Katsidis is absolutely shot to pieces. You would imagine if he's 80% of what he was at his peak, 70, 80%, he could give Coyle a really, really tough night. Anything less than that, and it could be an ugly spectacle, really, if Katsidis is a shadow of the man. I didn't watch the Graham Earl rematch.
No, I didn't approve of the Graham Earl rematch.
The fact that went 12, no, I'm not sure anybody did, bar the people involved. But the fact that went 12 rounds,
it's not a good sign.
Suggests that Katsidis maybe is not what he was. I remember when he fought on ESPN not long. I think he retired after it, maybe 2012. or early 2013. He lost a 10-round decision. He looked clumsy. He looked like his timing had gone. What do you think is going to happen in Hull?
Well, the thing is, Tommy Coyle is also vulnerable.
Exactly. That's what makes it such an interesting fight.
Because, yeah, there was that, you know, that crazy fight with Daniel Brizuela where they knocked each other down sort of four times each.
Yeah.
You know, Coyle can be hurt. I saw him on on an undercard in Leeds in May, a smaller, you know, guy who he should have really been handling easily, did hurt him. You know, and Katsidis, you know, if he's still got his punch, he's always going to be dangerous. And I think he could hurt Tommy at times, but I imagine he won't have enough to take advantage of those moments. You know, Coyle, you know, if Coyle boxes like he did against Derry Matthews until he got caught by a big shot, then he should win this. I'd expect him to have sort of, you know, to be too much of a handful for Katsidis, if Katsidis has declined as much as we think he has.
We're kind of speculating, really, aren't we? I mean, I think the bookies have got Tommy Coyle 8-13 favourite, Katsidis at 9-5. That is very, very much on the presumption that we are going to see an eroded, very much deteriorated Michael Katsidis. But it does happen now and again where we presume these guys are consigned to yesterday and they surprise us with one last performance. So beware Tommy Coyle. I mean, I remember Katsidis. I thought Katsidis on a downward spiral when he fought Kevin Mitchell. I think that was 4 years ago now. And he was like an animal that night. The way he finished Mitchell was frightening. So anything like that, and so it's a fight I'm interested
in. It's gonna be a rumble, like you say.
Luke Campbell. Let's talk about Luke Campbell. You like Luke Campbell.
He's Hull's answer to Rigondo.
It's fair to say. Yeah, the Hull Rigondo. What was your... Do you remember Campbell, very, very tidy boxer? What was your impression of Luke Campbell when you first saw him fight as an amateur? Did you think, I've asked you this about Joshua in the past, but did you think that Luke Campbell, did he stand out prior to, say, the Olympics and things like that? Was he a standout performer at amateur level?
Yeah, no, he was brilliant. He really was. And he had a sort of dip in form a few years ahead of the Olympics, where, you know, other guys had sort of overtaken him in the pecking order. But then he sort of came back, and he's a really stylish boxer. You know, I think he was, you know, a brilliant amateur, but then amateur bouts are only three rounds, so the sort of, you know, it gets harder, obviously, going over these longer distance fights as a professional. It is a different game. But yeah, he was a brilliant amateur, and he wasn't a sort of power puncher. So it's interesting that in some of his early fights, he's moved up in weight and shown some knockout power.
Is this guy he's fighting tomorrow? We've seen him, as you said earlier, you mentioned earlier, about that he had Tommy Coyle in all sorts of trouble and almost on the brink of being defeated. Can he get Luke Campbell in that level of trouble?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think it's it's only Campbell's ninth professional fight, so I think it's a good fight on paper. Makes sense because Brizuela did so well against Coyle, but I think Campbell's very hard to hit. So it's going to be hard for Brizuela to hurt to him and get to him. And he is small, even though he's got a bit of a punch on him. I think he's very going to find it very hard to sort of get in close to Campbell and, you know, reach him with those power shots.
Think Matchroom probably would like to match Tommy Coyle and Luke Campbell together probably next year.
Yeah, I think the plan is next summer. But I wonder, because if Campbell, like, just, you know, dominates Brizuela, you know, and just handles him comprehensively, does that then devalue a Tommy Coyle Campbell fight?
That, believe it or not, was my next question. Did you
think, great minds think alike?
Did you think that Campbell will be so efficient and impressive tomorrow that he will dampen the desire to see Coyle versus Campbell?
I do, and it probably will, but they're like, I've been at, you know, quite a few of those fight nights in Hull, and they both have Tommy Cole and Luke Campbell both have tremendous support up there. Like, they absolutely love them. So I think the fight would still, I think it would sell a lot of tickets in Hull, and it would be a great sort of event and a great spectacle. But I think, you know, the way Campbell has been looking and the way you'd expect him to perform against Brizuela, I think he'd be a very clear favourite against Coyle. As much as I like Tommy Coyle.
No, that's interesting. Okay, well,
and I suppose you could, it still would be an interesting fight in that, you know, Campbell's got so much skill, but Coyle's shown sort of bags of heart, especially in that Brizuela fight, like he just kept getting up.
Brizuela 10-1 underdog tomorrow. That is long odds for a two horse race. Is that fair? Judging by your breakdown there, it seems like it probably is fair. If Luke Campbell loses tomorrow, would that be the most surprised you have been by the outcome of a boxing match?
Yes, and devastated.
You do love Luke Campbell.
Okay, so let's
give you an idea then. Compare those odds. 10-1, Brizuela, and 16-1 though for Michael Sprott against Anthony Joshua. Let's talk a little bit about Anthony Joshua as well. Now, I don't think there's been a podcast since his last performance. There was some talk that it was a mismatch against Bakhtov. I mean, you can say any one round knockout is a mismatch after the event, but going into it, you and I had the discussion that although Joshua was exceptionally likely to win, it was a good marker of his progress to that point.
Yeah.
And the fact that Joshua knocked him out so impressively is testament to Joshua's ability rather than Bakhtov being a poor opponent, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree that. I think it was a good fight to make ahead of time, and yeah, you would have expected Joshua to knock him out, but we didn't know that until he did it. And Bakhtov was still, you know, a marked improvement of some of the other guys Joshua had fought. And they are, you know, some amateurs get rushed and have their reasons for doing that. I think, you know, I don't think there's any great reason to do that with Anthony Joshua. Maybe Luke Campbell could be moved, you know, a bit faster in comparison to Joshua. But again, I think this is, you know, another sort of good fight for a ninth fight. Most prospects are always heavy favourites for their first, 10 fights, aren't they?
Yeah, usually. So, but going back to Michael Sprott, then is that not a slight backward step? After the way that he's beat Bakhtov?
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. That it's sort of a step down, a slight step down from Bakhtov, because, you know, Sprott he's just looked vulnerable.
Especially for a few years now, hasn't he?
Yeah. So I think regardless of how well he's sort of boxing, as soon as Joshua catches him with one of those power shots, he's going to be in all sorts of trouble. Because I think we were both at the heavyweight prize fighter.
Yeah.
That Sprott was boxing on. Joshua was actually one of the sort of warm up acts.
He was,
that,
yeah.
Wasn't
James,
he?
Is that the one James Toney was? James Toney was there, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, there was one that wasn't. It was a tough watch.
It was. It was horrendous, wasn't it?
And with Michael Sprott, he was obviously, the field wasn't of a high standard. He was beating them, but when he got tagged, he did look shaky, so I'm not desperate to see clatter Michael Sprott.
No, you do feel...
I mean, I would watch it, obviously, but...
Yeah, you feel that's almost like a guaranteed outcome, is that Michael Sprott is going to get clattered within three rounds. You would That would be certainly the consensus prediction, inside three-round victory for Anthony Joshua. And also, he mentioned prize fighter there. He competed over in a similar kind of tournament over in Australia, and I believe that was his most recent ring action. And former heavyweight contender Carly Meehan sparked Michael Sprott in the first round. Michael Sprott, a few years ago, I wish that he was campaigning in Britain. I felt that he deserved to come back and fight some of the British guys. He was... because he could earn more money out in Germany, he was fighting out there. But kind of one of the biggest reasons why I'm not a big fan of this fight is I think it was a year ago I was speaking to Jim Evans, who kind of handled Michael Sprott through a lot of his career, and he just basically said he wished that Michael would retire now. So although I don't, you know, Michael Sprott, how you can also look at it a different way and say that Michael Sprott has gone about things that the difficult way, and he deserves this, because let's face it, he's probably going to be paid quite handsomely. But ultimately, this to me has the air of a mismatch about it.
Yeah.
And I think Joshua has proved at this level that he is so far above this level now that perhaps the time is to move on. But, you know, they're saying it's a British title eliminator. That's the way he wants to go. You can see why the fight's been made, but not a fan.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
And there are other sort of British heavyweights that would be worthy of being in a British title eliminator. Ian Lewison?
Mm.
Not, you know, obviously Josh would be a heavy favourite against these guys, but, you know, Gary Cornish is quite tall.
Yeah. John McDermott.
How's John McDermott doing?
Don't know, Big Bad John. Do you remember we watched him flatten Larry Alabama?
I remember. Never write off John McDermott.
We were in a boozer, weren't we, somewhere? By London Bridge, I think you remember.
When we were young.
Okay.
Anyway, let's get back to Hull. That's where the action is this week.
Have we covered it? Have we covered everything in Hull, pretty much?
I think so, yeah. I think it's similar, the Campbell Brizuela is sort of similar to Joshua Bakhtov in that a good fight on paper that in reality Campbell might win well. But I'd expect it to go some rounds. He's not going to just sort of squash him.
Okay, so I think we've pretty much covered most things. Also in the magazine, well worth reading, is a feature by Danny Flexen on Billy Joe Saunders, which gives an interesting insight into the life of the middleweight traveller and his amusing character. Worth reading that. John, what else in the magazine? What's going on in the amateur world that people can enjoy?
Loads. We've got interviews with some top quality amateurs in Sam Maxwell and Sean McGoldrick. There's lots of good stuff in there. There's lots going on at the moment. European Youth Championships are happening as we speak. That's where the boxer knocked out the referee, not an English boxer, a Croatian boxer. So it's all going off.
It's all going off. Right, just to finish then, I printed out a list of odds for upcoming fights, and at the end, as usual, there is kind of speculated fights and the odds on them that you can get now. So, Floyd Mayweather, Amir Khan, what do you reckon's going on there with the odds, John?
Oh, God. Do they have it quite close? As in what? As in who would win that? Or is the fight going to happen?
No. It's actually you could go into a bookmakers now and say, I think Amir Khan's going to win, and you could bang down some money on it. So they've already got the odds set out as if the fight has been signed and sealed.
Well, Mayweather's going to be the favourite, isn't he? But not by a country mile, maybe.
1-4 favourite, Amir Khan, 11-2. Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao?
Is Mayweather a clear favourite?
1-4 again, Pacquiao 3-1. Draw 22-1. But the draw for Khan Mayweather 33-1.
Right. So where's the cheeky fiver going?
I'd probably fancy Mayweather Pacquiao. No, I don't know actually. No, I think Khan Mayweather draw is a more appealing bet than Mayweather Pacquiao. Anyway, moving on. Carl Frampton, Scott Quigg.
No. What, Frampton a narrow favourite?
You'd be right in saying Frampton is a narrow favourite. 8-13, whereas Scott Quigg 13-8. Draw 25-1. And finally, Kell Brook, Amir Khan.
Oh. Does the stab wound, you know, does that shifted things in Amir Khan's favour?
Well, they are in his favour at the moment. Whether or not that is a result of the stab wound, I don't know. But yeah, Amir Khan 5-6, Kell Brook 6-5. So Khan, a narrow favourite. Is that fair, do you think, considering that Brook comes into it with an unbeaten record, with a world title? Do you think it's fair to have?
I mean, I probably would pick Amir Khan. I think he's, you know, I thought he looked fantastic against Collazo, really sort of proved that he's, you know, top quality welterweight. But it's a proper fight, isn't it? Because you could definitely imagine Khan getting himself caught on a big shot, and then if Brook is someone hurt, he can take them out. I'd like, yeah. Are those fights ever going to happen like that?
Who knows, mate? Who knows? Right, that'll do. It's what time is it? Is it about 4 o'clock?
I've lost track of time and space.
Still got a lot to do, and it's Friday afternoon, so we better go and crack on. So we'll leave you to it. But thanks everybody so much for listening, downloading. Your support is genuinely, genuinely appreciated, and we'll do our best to make this a weekly thing from now on. And I do apologise that we have missed a couple of weeks over the last month or so.
But they can buy the magazine every week.
They can buy the magazine every week.
It's really
week.
Good.
It is very good.
It's got
good.
Some stuff in it.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you don't hear from us next week, buy the magazine. All right? See you later.